FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It is September 5th, 2017. Hurricanes. Well, we just got done with Hurricane Harvey, and here comes Hurricane Irma in alphabetical order. Funny how that works. Well, there's also financial hurricanes taking place around the globe, geopolitical hurricanes. It is a rough season ahead. Before we get any further, don't forget, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. And what is going to happen? Well, we see gold has taken off. Silver lagging a little bit, but just a matter of time. Here's John Rubino to discuss. John, good morning.
Morning, Kerry. Yeah, while you were out on your yacht this holiday weekend, a lot of stuff happened.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, my yacht. Yes, for sure.
Gold is popping because of North Korea,
right?
Which makes sense. I mean, they just set off a hydrogen bomb, which is orders of magnitude bigger than anything they've been able to manage so far, which means they've got serious ordnance now, and they've got presumably the ability to deliver it, at least regionally, and they're going up the food chain as far as ICBMs go. So it won't be long, based on this trend, before they can hit Europe and the US. Mm-hmm. So North Korea is now a front burner problem, although it's been a back burner problem for a long time. You know, previous administrations have cut deals with these guys in which they got things they wanted in return for promising to stop their nuclear program, but they never did. They just lied, took the deal, and kept on doing what they were doing. And their goal is to get to the point where they are an obvious, undeniable nuclear power that nobody can mess with. And that's, you know, they've learned the lesson of Saddam Hussein, who didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and we overthrew them. And in Libya, the same thing happened. Muammar Gaddafi did not have nuclear weapons, and he was overthrown very easily. They don't want to be in that category of people that can just be taken out by the U.S. when the U.S. feels like it, which is understandable. But from our point of view, they're crazy people running the country, and they're completely capable of either using that technology or sharing it with Iran or somebody else who might also use it, you know. And when nukes get small enough that they can be delivered pretty easily and undetectably, then the world changes in a really dramatic way. That's the kind of thing we're looking at now. And the U.S. government is deciding what to do about that. Do they intervene now, try to take out North Korea's capabilities at the risk of North Korea shooting off some of what they've got and blowing up Seoul or some other place that's nearby? Or do they just let it all happen? Those are not good choices, either one of them.
Not in the least.
But that's what we're left with now. And that's, you know, it's a kind of a life lesson. If you let something fester until it becomes overwhelming, then your choices narrow down to really unpalatable options. And it's all you've got. And then, you know, you can make the case that the financial world is in the same boat, that we could have fixed our finances in the 1990s, but we didn't. And then we could have fixed them in the decade that followed, and we didn't. And now we're at the point where, you know, we have major crises, no matter what choice we make from here on out. And the next decade will be those choices coming home to roost. You know, the black swans will be landing pretty soon because we've left ourselves with really no options. Anyhow, fascinating weekend leading to a really interesting few months here, no doubt.
Well, and then tie that into the fact we've got these natural disasters going off all over the place. We had Hurricane Harvey, supposedly $180 billion worth of damage. Who do you think is going to pay for it? Well, we know that. And then we've got Hurricane Irma coming up, and that one, I'm in its path, and I'm wondering what I should be doing here. I think I'll put up the shutters and get the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah. A Cat 5 hurricane is one of those things that people have been worrying about for decades now. As more and more people move to coastal areas, especially along the U.S. East Coast, the financial damage that would be done by something like that grows commensurately, along with, you know, the loss of life and everything, because, you know, something like a Cat 5 hurricane hitting the Miami area or something would kill a lot of people, besides doing hundreds of billions of dollars of damage, which, as you said, you know who's going to pick up the tab for that. It's going to be, first of all, the insurance companies, which will be overwhelmed by it. And if they survive, they'll have to raise rates to astronomical levels to make up those losses. And second of all, taxpayers, because the government insures a lot of property along coasts. And you could make the case that that's a really bad idea, that if we want to live in these really attractive places near the ocean or near other kinds of natural disaster propensity, we should pay our way. We should pay the insurance that it costs to cover the risks that we are taking on as individuals. But that's not the case. For instance, in Houston, Houston had immense growth in the past 20 years and a lot of sprawl, where it just spread out and spread out and spread out, so that when a hurricane came its way, they couldn't even evacuate because there's nowhere for the people to go, because there are people wherever you look. Yeah. You know, you drive an hour outside of Houston and you're still in kind of a crowded place. So what good does it do you to drive that hour where you're just stuck in traffic and there's no real shelter for you out there anyhow? So they just told everybody to shelter in place, and then everybody got flooded, you know? All those cars, what was it, Carrie, 100,000 cars?
At least.
Or was it more?
It could be more. I mean, yeah. They said 500,000 were destroyed in Hurricane Katrina, and this one's a lot worse.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting from the auto industry's standpoint. Their biggest problem was growing inventories of unsold cars. Well, suddenly that inventory problem has been taken care of, because the insurance companies are going to have to buy hundreds of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of new cars in the next year to cover the losses on, what happened in Houston, where these cars were just, they're underwater now, you know, and that ruins a car. So
yeah, that's it.
That takes care of at least Detroit's problems.
That's giving new meaning to the term underwater, huh?
Yeah. Lots of underwater mortgages out there now.
Yeah, well, really.
Car loans. So we have problems on multiple levels now. The immediate one is that stuff is happening right this minute. The longer term problems are that we have put ourselves on the hook for these problems as they happen, and in that way encouraged people to exacerbate the risk. You know, that's called moral hazard, where you set up a system where the incentives point towards doing stuff that you wouldn't normally do unless you were covered in some way. You know, in the financial system, we assume the Fed is going to bail us out no matter what insane risk we take in the stock market or derivatives or bonds or et cetera, et cetera. And so we take those risks because we aren't really worried as we would be as if it was all on us. You know, if we had to cover all our losses rather than the FDIC picking up our bank account losses and the government stepping in and bailing out the big banks and covering our losses in bank stocks and covering the big banks, bad speculation and everything, a lot of that wouldn't be happening. But it is happening because we feel like we're covered. So you create a world in which risk doesn't seem to be real anymore, and you get insane amounts of risk taken on. And that's where we are. And you know, you can look at it in, on our coastal areas, in home building, and you can look at it in the financial markets, in speculation, in for instance, derivatives, which are now a $quadrillion market almost, and basically anywhere else in geopolitics or wherever. And it all comes back to the fact that we haven't required individuals to be responsible for the results of their own actions in a lot of different aspects of life. And that's led to a society that used to be risk averse becoming, extremely, extremely leveraged in every way you can imagine, and therefore a lot more fragile. So welcome to the variable rate world, where interest rates moving will wipe people out, and any kind of a bear market in equities or bonds is systemically threatening now. It's not just something that you get through and then go on. It's something that could end the system as we know it if it happens. So expect governments to be responding to this stuff in bigger and bigger ways, because they have no choice, because it's an existential threat that they're dealing with, something that didn't used to be that way, but it is now. And they will respond commensurately with trillions and trillions of dollars thrown at these problems.
Very true. And, back in 1900, you had the Galveston hurricane. So 6,000 to 12,000 people were killed there. Galveston was the largest city in Texas at the time. And after that hurricane, you know what? The government wasn't there to bail everyone out. That wasn't our economic philosophy back in 1900. And the city is really a shadow of what it was before that hurricane, well, obviously the population's gotten larger because we're 117 years past that, and you have flood insurance and all of that stuff. And as a result, it's been rebuilt probably way more than then. At the end of the 19th century, Galveston had a population of 37,000 people. I mean, that was big. That was a big city for those days. And now, you know, it's got hundreds of thousands. But, you know, we just we used to learn from history, but we stopped learning from history, it seems here, John.
Well, we learned the wrong lessons, Kerry. We learned the lesson that that we've got to have the federal government mitigating these risks with taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. And that in turn taught people that it's fine to go ahead and do stuff that's extremely risky because they've got Big Brother at their back, you know, somebody who's going to bail them out if they get into any kind of trouble. And so now we've got all of these risks being taken on that nobody in their right mind would take on. You know, you wouldn't build a mansion on a North Carolina barrier island, right? If you had to pay for the whole loss, if the thing got blown away, and yet go to these barrier islands and they're like the Hamptons or something like that, where there's big house after big house and everybody assumes that they're covered. You know, if a hurricane comes through and just wipes out the entire island, they get a big check from the government or from an insurance company, which is backstopped by the government. So nobody's really as worried as they should be. Taxpayers are the ones who should be worried now. You know, we don't really understand the actual amount of risk that as a class we've taken on. Mm-hmm. And should two or three big things go wrong, then all of a sudden that's going to hit home too, because the government's going to come back to us taxpayers and say, you know what? We had all this unforeseen stuff happen. Nobody could have predicted this and that happening at the same time. So we're going to have to inflate away your currency and make your bank account worthless, or we're going to have to raise your taxes by some unconscionable amount because, you know what? It's a national emergency, and the national emergency will be not because of these things that happen, but because we took on all of these guarantees against these things happening. So, yeah, the nuclear war scenario, of course, with North Korea is much worse in the short run than any of this stuff. But this stuff is out there and it's pretty bad. So let another big hurricane hit the east coast of the United States after the one that just hit, and we're going to be talking about damages in the trillions of dollars, which used to be real money. You know, that's what it took to invade Iraq and occupy it for a decade. And that's also what it would cost to put solar panels on every roof in the United States, you know? So we're wasting money that we could have used for really important things. And we're doing it over and over and over again and just digging ourselves more deeply into a hole. So buy gold. You know, at some point, all of this comes back to the dollar and the fact that there aren't enough dollars in the world to cover this stuff. But if we create the amount of dollars needed to cover all this stuff, then the dollar becomes virtually worthless. Therefore, other kinds of money become very valuable in dollar terms. And gold and silver are the kinds that historically have done really well in situations like that. You know, when a country's destroying its currency, gold and silver continue to hold their value through it all, which means they go through the roof in local currency terms. And that's what we're going to see out there somewhere. You know, there's going to be a confluence of crises, which culminates in a currency crisis, which will lead gold and silver to do their, you know, their final move that the gold bugs have been talking about forever. Gold goes to $10,000 an ounce. Silver goes to $700 an ounce. And the only people with any real capital left are the people who stacked gold and silver while all this was going on. So get ready, Kerry. It's going to be a fun time for gold bugs and a terrifying time for everybody else in the world, apparently.
Well, you know, this is what we've been talking about. And there's always black swans. These two hurricanes are black swans. Nobody could have anticipated how bad. We went 12 years without a direct hit on the U.S. coast, and here we are, right?
Yeah. And you know, you can't even really chalk this up to global warming or anything, because stuff like this happens. It's happened throughout history. As you said, the one that hit Galveston hit, what, a century ago? And we weren't as industrialized. We weren't putting as much carbon in the air back then as we are now. But stuff like that still happened. You know, the Dust Bowl happened before the age of global warming. Many, many other ecological and climatic, you know, problems have happened in the past. And that's not to say that I'm taking a position on climate change, because I'm not qualified to say anything about that. But it is obvious that stuff happens. You know, you have earthquakes, you have volcanoes, you have monster storms just in the nature of weather since the beginning of time. And we're not planning for stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or we're planning in the wrong way by guaranteeing everything, you know, for the people who move to floodplains and Hurricane Alley and places like that. So eventually this is going to overwhelm our finances. You know, give us a stock and bond bear market, which is long overdue just based on the normal course of the business cycle. Combine that with some kind of a war somewhere and a couple of big natural disasters. And you're talking about amounts of money to cover it all that can't possibly be managed with a printing press, because the printing press doesn't control the value of the currency. It just controls the supply. So let us create $5 trillion out of thin air, along with the tens of trillions that we've created in the past few years. And maybe that's the tipping point. Maybe that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. And we finally get that currency crisis. And when it happens, because we've delayed it for such a long time and taken on so much debt in the meantime, it's going to be beyond anything we've seen ever. You know, there's never been a global currency crisis like what is probably coming. Previous currency crises have been brutal, but they've been localized. You know, one country screws up its money and has a financial crisis in the context of a world that is using sound money. That's what used to happen. Now, nobody's using sound money. Everybody is using fiat currencies fueled by unlimited printing presses, and they're all responding in the same way to every little squiggle, you know, every 10 or 15% drop in their local stock market. They meet it with immense amounts of new currency because they've been able to get away with that for so long. When they can't get away with it anymore, they will have nothing left. No tools, no weapons, and they'll just give up, you know? Or at least that generation of politicians will give up. They'll be replaced by somebody else who will have to deal with the actual problems.
Yeah. Well, you hit the nail on the head. Somebody's going to have to deal with these problems at some point. It's going to be you and me and everybody else. And let it be a lesson that when you put off a problem that you could solve today with a little bit of effort, but maybe a little unpleasant, and you put it off for tomorrow, it only gets much worse, whether it's out of control federal flood insurance, or it's North Korea or Iran developing nuclear weapons, or whatever the case may be. When you put off problems you can solve today for tomorrow, they will only get worse. And that's where we're at now, John. And a price of gold, you know, we're looking at it. It's pretty amazing how fast it went up, isn't it?
Well, that's what gold does in a crisis. You know, as soon as people get scared, the sentiment in that market flips on its head. People are bored. They don't care about inflation hedges or financial insurance or anything like that because things are so great. But the minute something happens that convinces people things aren't great, money just pours into precious metals. So we're at a really interesting point right now in the gold market because the short-term stuff, you know, the Commitment of Traders report is screamingly negative right now.
Yeah.
But geopolitics and macrofinance, stuff like that, are screamingly positive for gold and silver. So the big stuff will eventually overwhelm the small stuff, you know, the little indicators like advanced decline lines and the Commitment of Traders report. But those things have worked for a decade, and you can't just dismiss the normal fluctuations in the gold market. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few weeks or months, whether, what's going on in the paper markets, the Commitment of Traders report, reasserts itself and gives us a really nasty correction, or whether the macro stuff just overwhelms the paper market. And then you get physical demand determining the price of gold and silver going forward, which means that it heads back to its record level of 1900 and change on gold and $50 and change in silver, and then just keeps on going, you know, because we've got the legitimate price, the real value of gold and silver out there at much, much higher levels. Based on the amount of paper that's being created in the world. You know, if you wanted to go back to a gold standard and have enough gold relative to paper currency to actually make it work, you need $10,000 an ounce gold. So that's the target that is out there. And that's the prize that everybody should keep their eyes on. And the question then becomes, how do you get there? Do you get there in one amazing arc where in the space of a few months or a couple of years, it does a Bitcoin and just keeps on going up? Or does it happen more slowly with a bunch of squiggles in between that terrify people and shake out the weak hands and then, you know, give the strong hands a chance to accumulate more. Who knows? We can't know that because we don't know whether we're going to bomb North Korea. We don't know whether a Cat 5 hurricane is going to hit Miami. Mm-hmm. We don't know any of those things. And those are the things that are going to determine the trajectory of precious metals. But having said that, either way, if you end up at $10,000 ounce gold in 5 or 10 years, you don't really need to think about this other stuff. You just accumulate it a little bit at a time right now and just let it ride. And that's probably the wisest way to deal with a completely unknowable set of details in the future. You know, if you know the big stuff, but you don't know how the small stuff will play out in the short run, just be steady. Don't try to be cute and time markets or anything. Just add to your holdings a little bit at a time and be relatively certain that it's going to work out in the end and you're going to be okay.
Hey, and just so you know, the price of gold right now is right around $1,339. It's up $4.30 the ounce today. It was up yesterday, close to $10. Silver is flat for the day. I wouldn't put much stock in that either way. Interesting thing about gold, John, is in the past 30 days, it's up $80 the ounce, 6.33%. But even year over year, remember last year, this time we had that big gold rally. It's up $11.40 from last year this time. So what are we seeing? Higher highs and higher lows. And that's what a trend reversal is all about. Anyways, we got to go now, but find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. And while you're at it, sign up for his newsletter. Email us, kl@carrylutz.com. And hey, take a look at the Twitter feed, @CarryLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And John, we will catch up next week. Hopefully the storm will pass and not do a lot of damage. And the studio will be able to be easily restarted. I'm thinking, the more I think about it, the more I think I'm going to get out of here, but we'll see what happens.
Okay, Carrie. Well, whatever you do, stay safe. Good luck.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.